This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust,
Rose,
and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
Hey, After Buzzers, before we move on to your next topic, we just want to say thanks to our sponsor, Anchor. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. Plus, there are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Also, Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. Plus, you can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership, and it's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to Anchor FM to get started.
You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web and your number one source for after-show entertainment.
From the AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California, presented by Maria Menounos and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies, this is AfterBuzz TV's True Detective After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's True Detective After Show.
Just call me Angel.
Angel.
No. I'm gonna sing it.
Don't do it, please. Welcome to the True Detective After Buzz After Show, episode seven.
After you're gone.
That was the lovely, lovely Juice Newton singing a beautiful. I'll call it a torch song.
Is that what you're gonna call it
in the morning? Well, that's what the genre's called.
I got you. Right. You're going. You're there. I got it.
But it's a torch song, and it's a torch song because you know it's one of those sort of like. Songs that you sing about a love that's gone or you missed or something that someone you've been with.
You hold a torch for.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what I'm trying
you're
to say.
You're carrying a torch.
Thank you, Julia. She says it's so exciting.
You were doing this.
I'm not sure what was happening, but it was making me decidedly uncomfortable.
Welcome to the After Buzz, True Detective After Show. I'm joined here, as always, by the lovely Joe Sanfilippo.
It is so nice to be here with you guys.
Oh, that was coming to me.
No, but in the even lovelier, Julia Kearley.
Oh, well, thank you. Hi, everybody.
And he is the effervescent Joseph Braswell.
Yes, I'm effervescing all over the place. Anyway. we're not joined by Nando Velasquez, who is out again on assignment, and he will be back very shortly.
We miss you, Nando.
We miss you, Nando. So, True Detective, after you're gone, let's get right into this bad boy because there's a lot to discuss as usual. I mean, is there just one we can just breeze through? I don't think so. There's always these episodes.
There's never enough time to discuss this show.
So dense. Well, let's talk about the title first. After You've Gone is. It's actually, speaking of torch song, it's a very famous torch song. I mean, like, it's years and years old. It's probably had about, I don't know, 60 different versions of this song that's been done. And Nick Pizzolatto mentioned that he, you know, wanted to call it this and wanted to sort of, reference this sort of torch song because it's this whole thing about, you know, you longing for this, like I said, holding a torch for someone. Oh, it's Nando. Sorry. Nando's calling right now. holding a torch for someone that you've lost, and that very much applies to both Rust and Cole, because we've seen that they've, you know, look, these are two guys who had a, you know, uneasy partnership and friendship back in 95. It lasted all the way to 2002, and they haven't seen each other for 10 years, and now they're together, and you can see that they kind of like, you know, they missed each other, they need each other, there's a lot going on there in that relationship.
Well, it seems like a couple guys that you know when they get that there's that great scene in the Hart Investigative Services suites there when they're talking about like what have you been up to, and they mirror each other like nothing. Right. Like, nothing really good.
You remember in the last episode, Cole says to Hart, "Buddy, without me, you don't exist."
Yeah.
And when they parted ways. they sort of ceased to exist.
Yeah, yeah. Both of them.
Nothing happened in their lives.
Point. Yeah.
And now that they're back together, now it's like buddy cops. Like, this is the best they've ever been. They really realize that they need each other.
The band is back together. As Nick Pizzolatto said again. He said, this is, we wanted to get the band back together. Now the band's back together and we're out.
And they're better than ever.
They're better than ever. Got a little more weight on Marty.
That's a round tummy.
Marty's sporting a round tummy, but he's still great. I love the fact that this whole theme of these torch song, because when we open in the bar and the jukebox, the beautiful jukey, and you see our girl Juice Newton, and they play Angel in the Morning, and it's like the two guys sitting there catching up, but in an uneasy catch up, because you see,
Rust.
No, Rust is very, you know, is very much trying to seduce.
He's got to, yeah.
And trying to get his old partner back, but he's not having it.
No, Marty wants nothing to do with this.
Nothing to do with it whatsoever. In fact, he even says, like, you know, if you were drowning,
I'd throw you a barbell. I'd throw you a fucking barbell. Why should I ever help you?
Yeah. So, I mean, but I love the way, like, this is sort of speaks to, like, the sort of the overall theme of the series with these two men, is that they've always had this unspoken bond. I don't know if it's a male thing. It's this thing of, like, we're not even sure we like each other. We're not even sure, you know, if we may hate each other's guts, but we have absolute respect for each other's abilities. And it's not just so much of Marty having respect for Cole, but I think Cole in some ways has respect for Marty instead of contempt.
Well, you know, there's so much that goes on. You know, I've never been in the position where I've had something like this happen, obviously. I mean, this,
oh,
I
really? You haven't had
quintuple
homicide?
Believe it or not. I've never been a part of something like this.
Right.
But it's really interesting the way that they talk about it. Like, we have a debt.
Right.
We are not done.
Yes.
The hero's quest is not over. We have to go back to work. And that's the whole pitch that Marty's got, that Rust has got to Marty. Like, this is not over. You have a debt. And he goes, what the fuck does that mean?
Right.
And he says, this isn't over. Now, maybe if you hadn't clipped Ledoux in 95, you know, we'd have gotten to the bottom of this in 95. But we started this. We are finishing this.
Right.
Talk about holding a torch, not just for each other, but for
Ooh.
This case. Yes.
Ooh. Ooh. Torch for the case.
Yes. And it's so true. And I love how that is. It's, you know, I like, you know, you know, Marty gives about 9,000 reasons as to why he should not have anything to do with Rust to his face. Dude, I don't even know what you're talking about. Look at you. You look like maybe you made this thing up. What are you doing? You might be the killer yourself. And he gives all these sort of reasons to himself. And then Rust just says, there's one reason. We have a debt.
We have a debt.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, shit. As always, which again we see over and over and over again with these guys where, you know, Marty, whether it's, you know, him, you know, at the bar when he's cheating on his wife, he's like, God, why did I cut that? You know, and Russell would be like, because you blah, blah, blah. And Marty would be like, shit.
Oh, yeah.
You're
cut
right.
Cut to the heart of it.
You're right. So,
but you got to be a certain type of person, and they both are. You got to be a certain type of person for you to take that as a debt. And obviously, the sheriff, Sheriff Chilton, is that what you said? He doesn't take things that way.
Well, yeah, we'll get there. He's
a good old boy. He wants to have a good time, and that's it. And that's the way the river flows, and that's the way I'm going to go.
I mean, I'll take it one step further than that. He's involved. So, like,
you think he's involved, or you think he's just covering up?
No, it's both. I think it's more of a cover up. My point is, even if he's covering up, he's involved. So it's not like I'll just let the river flow. It's like I was involved in this, so I'm covering this up. So therefore, I don't want to talk about it.
Well,
he has no debt.
When we get there, I do. You know, one thing is worth considering. You know, it's a possible future that Marty could have had. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, this Marty could have been Chilton.
Yeah.
Childress. Marty could have been Childress. He could have wound up being a boss. Could have been in charge.
Yeah.
Driving a Maserati.
He got
that. I pinched off somebody for a quarter ounce of weed.
Yeah.
Shithead. You know. But I mean,
don't have a quarter ounce of weed in that
not,
county.
Not in that county. No way.
No chance.
But that's the. I think that serves that dual purpose. It could have been Marty's future. But if he was a different kind of guy. But you know, you say to him, we have this debt, and he got enough involved to follow him to the storage shed.
Right. Well, let's get back to that. So, you know, we have that sort of, you know, these guys reacquainting themselves with each other. Really, at this point, it's just really about the case. It's like, it's really a lot of, and it's a lot of great, and some great exposition there in terms of explaining, you know, what Rust has been doing all these years, you know?
Like, no, it's a great device.
Yeah, it's a great device to be able to say, okay, let's fill in some gaps here. Like, why do you look like that? Whatever happened to you? Like, have you been around this town? He's like, and where's he been?
Alaska.
Alaska.
8 years in Alaska.
He looks like he's been 8 years.
Yes,
fishing.
He does.
Out of a fishing boat in Alaska.
How did Marty put it? He says, time has, no, he says, you look good. Russ tells Marty, you look good. And Marty says, yeah, time has his way with all of us.
Yes.
Say, you must have pissed him off.
Yeah. You must have pissed him off. There's a lot of good lines. Another great line in that exchange is Russ describing his, very calmly describing himself, spent the last 8 years functional but hammered.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool.
That sounds like every Vegas trip I've ever been on. Minus the functional.
Yeah. Thank God they got people in that town to drag you around and put you at a table.
So yeah, but we really learned a lot about more so Russ in that moment before we get into what Marty's been up to per se. But we finally get to see, you know, what is in this goddamn storage locker, you know, and which was a moment for me. I was scared. I was as scared as Marty when, you know, the suspense of getting to that locker. I mean, I knew I knew it was going to be some crazy, you know, setup with the big board. I knew there'd be our famous, we love a big board. I knew there'd be the big board in the storage
big
locker.
Big homeland board.
But in the big homeland board.
Yeah, I need it.
But in that moment, when he's walking up and it's like, they really played it up, man. Like the music, the lights.
Even him disappearing into the storage
into the
unit.
Darkness. I'm like, turn on the light.
You know what? I got to say though, that for exposition, I mean, because this whole episode to me feels like, it's a stop. We've got all this exciting stuff that's happened. All right, stop for a second. Now we're going to catch everybody up because we've only got eight episodes to do this stuff. Mm-hmm. So here's what's going on for the next. All right, we're going to orient everybody. And you know, you could do that in the most boring way possible, or you could have Marty come up with a pulled 38 and nervous, and the lights come up, and you built tension, and you got the tension of the whole scene, like sell me, sell me, sell me. Bullshit, bullshit. It was so well done, and I love that line that Rust has. So what are you packing there? It was 38. Hollow points? Yeah. Well, that'll do it.
But also, I like the fact that he did not turn around. Like, he knew that Russ was going to pull on him. I mean, that Marty was going to pull on him. Like, you know,
of course he would.
Look, I would too. Like, yeah. Falling cold in that dark-ass storage. Like, turn on the light. So he clicks on the light, and of course, it's the big board, and he just pops a beer back in there. You know, it's very, very cool.
And especially since he doesn't know what he heard from those two cops for the last interrogation.
Right.
He doesn't know what he thinks of him right now.
Right. And so in which we get into that with more exposition about sort of why, because there's some more explaining to do, because even at that point, you know, Marty's not on board. Like, he's less on board once he sees the big board. He goes in the storage locker with the big board and all the photos. He's like, oh, I'm really out.
Dude.
No, the guy looks nuts.
Dude, you're crazy.
He's got the thing. And so he's explaining.
10 years. This is what you've been doing?
Yes. Ugh. He's got the maps.
Well, 2 years.
He's got the no. Well, 2 years.
Yeah, two years since he's been back.
Yes.
But I'll tell you what. I haven't lived in too many storage lockers, but 2 years in a storage locker, like, it's a long time. Not that he lives there, but 2 years of, like, working out of a storage locker.
Oh, yeah.
That's a long-ass time.
But for 10 years, he hasn't let this go. It's just not the last 2 years.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Now he's just back in the thick of it where it all took place and with momentum.
Right.
So what do you think? Do you think he went to Alaska and fished for as long as he could until he couldn't take it anymore, until it built up in his mind, until he had to come back?
Well, yeah. Well, he said as much.
Yeah.
He essentially said that, you know, he left and he spent a lot of time trying to forget, trying to maybe think that he's, you know, made this whole thing up, or maybe he starts to think that there's this conspiracy theory that he knows is there, but he's trying to ignore it. He drank a lot of it away. He did a lot to sort of get through this whole situation.
To numb himself.
And then he only came back with, this isn't right. I've got to go back and repay this debt. You know, but I like the fact that what I'm curious about is to why did it take him 2 years to get to the point where he wanted to find
Well, he said that he only is talking to Marty because of the investigation. He wasn't going to bother him.
Okay.
Yeah. And he needed him.
Yeah. Well, I wonder if it's a matter of he needed them, or if now that it's as hot as it is, he's not going to be able to get any information. He's not going to be able to find anything without somebody on the
inside.
That's
what I'm saying. He needed him. He has the access.
We're saying the same thing. You're right.
I am. You heard it here, folks.
Yes.
I'm right.
So in the storage locker, they have an exchange, and they do, you know, they look through the stuff, and he's still not buying it. Well, go ahead.
Well, they talk about Wellspring, and we get a little more on Wellspring. We get the 14 schools, and we get that they're within a 10-mile radius. All these kids have gone missing. Two times as many missing down by the bayou, which I wonder if that's a real stat or not. I wonder if that's something that sounded real to me.
Someone should do an investigation on that. You're a West Coast bastard. Do you want it to be real?
I guess maybe that's the truth. And then you get the 1988 child molestation accusation, Shepherd's Flock, Light of the Way, and then we land on Toby Boulair or Johnny Joni.
Johnny Joni. What a great character.
Great name, Johnny Joni.
Everything. Like,
well, you know, this show's really good at these sort of like guest star spots as our good friend.
Rob Beitzel had a great one.
Robert Beitzel did. And they're really good at these sort of like these little moments here. And Johnny Joni was great. It sounds like a David Bowie song or something. It's like an Elvis Costello song.
Johnny Joni.
Yes. I don't know. But it's great. So there's that story. I do like that they're still using these flashbacks as devices too. Is not too heavy handed with them, but you got to fill in some of the blanks here.
Yeah. And you get the progression, which I also enjoyed because we got to see Rust interviewing Johnny Joni a couple years ago.
Yes.
And Rust didn't look nearly as jacked up as he looks now.
He had the hair.
He had the hair, but that was it. Yeah. Otherwise, he still looked Matthew McConaughey. He still looked like all right. He looked good, you know.
Right.
But
he did.
Yes, he did. And then you see these last 2 years, whatever he's gotten into these last 2 years has just worn on him.
Yeah, I mean, so it's a photo.
He's a man obsessed.
Well, the unifying factor here seems to be our real, because we thought, like, here's the thing, we thought all this time that we talked about the monster, we talked about what this Yellow King, you know, may be, or this monster, we always thought it was Reginald Due. Right? I mean, so leading up to this thing, we saw him in the tidy whities and the gas mask, and we thought, here's the monster. And that's kind of what we thought. But we know now that he's not the monster. The monster is a man with the scars. Right?
Well, Johnny Joni talks about asleep, but not asleep, so you get the idea he's drugged, maybe.
He's talking about his experiences in school.
Right.
Right? So he's, go on, I'm sorry.
And one, he said his eyes were closed, but he couldn't move, but he was awake. He was looking at the inside of his eyelids.
Mm-hmm.
And he's talking about the men, they were taking pictures and doing other things, and they had animal faces. So he thought it was a dream. And then the scarred up face was so bad, he just assumed that was a dream too. And then Marie Fontenot, she's the only other one that he thought was, knew. Everybody else, they didn't know about it.
Yeah.
Terrible stuff, man.
Well, terrible stuff. I mean, and speaking of which, I mean, this is kind of the thing that really sort of pushes Marty over the edge and realizes that beyond the fact that there's a debt to be paid and what needs to happen is that, unfortunately, he pops out the tape, the VHS tape, which, I don't know.
I had the most overwhelming sense of dread for what was that? Maybe like a minute and a half of Marty putting the tape in and Marty making the decision to turn it on and the little clips that we got to see and then pull back from it and you see his reaction.
Man, I mean,
I had a bad feeling of what was on that tape.
I mean, we talked about this before. This is kind of this is now as a device, and Nick Pizzolatto says it. It says as much. Like, this is a device they use. He says he doesn't want to really get into. You know, this isn't a show. He hates gore. He doesn't want to get into a show about, like, you know, what really actually happened. So we have a lot of reaction. And I talked about last week about this is what's driving these guys mad. They've seen some shit. Whatever he saw in the, in the container, whenever they see something.
He sees in the microwave,
He sees in the microwave, which we get glimpses of. But it was just so well shot because it's, as any horror genre person knows, it's way much more scary to see someone's reaction or to let your mind imagine.
It's what you see in your mind.
It's 100 times more horrifying.
And it's always going to be worse than what's actually there.
That's how the Greeks did it. They would never show anything on stage. The Greeks in ancient theater, they would never show anything on stage. They'd come off stage. They'd go off stage, kill somebody, and then have that person come out on stage with reaction to what had happened.
Wow.
And they felt that evoked more from the audience.
And I think it still works here. Yeah.
And, really, what was in that video was, guys in costumes holding a little kid's hands and then eventually holding a little kid's ankles. That was it. And that was enough to destroy us.
It was a sacrifice that was not, you know, good. And, you know, Cary Fukunaga talk about shooting. He's talking about how he shot that scene. I mean, I'm just breaking through a little bit on here. And he's talking about how, you know, it was, he did it really quickly, but he shot just a small room where they shot it. So really just him in an old school Betacam. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he just went in there and got it quick. And then that was it. I mean, he, you know, obviously they only shot what they showed, I'm assuming. But, you know, man, Woody Harrelson, what a great, fantastic job there with that reaction. Because, like you said, I had the same dread when McConaughey rolls up and drops the flask. I'm like, oh no. Not the flask. Like, what? Not the flask.
There was a lot of drinking going on in this episode.
Yeah.
Every scene, there's swinging beers and swinging off flasks and Jameson.
And drinking.
Every single scene, I'm sorry, not drinking.
And smoking the whole time. Like, yeah. There was a lot of doing damage to ourselves. One thing I think we've skipped a little bit is talking about Erath and this rural sense of Mardi Gras.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And Saturnalia and this idea of a winter festival with the antlers and the masks.
And how the deeper down they get to the, in the bayou, the more they have a rural sense of Mardi Gras, right?
Now, what they call it? Courrier de Mardi Gras?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
If you look it up on Wikipedia, or anything else, it's really a trip. Even the pictures that they're putting up that are kind of designed to be benign are creepy as hell.
Yeah.
And the idea is that it sounds like the idea is that there's like a captain and he's in charge of the revelers. And the idea is it comes from this French tradition of going and begging, toward the end of the winter, cause the nobles had the money and the peasants didn't have any money. And so towards the end of the winter, they'd run out of food and they'd go as a group and beg at the nobles' houses. And then they'd put on a show. They'd kind of do a little song and dance, maybe a little mess around.
Then they throw beads, right? And they'd flash their boobs.
And they flash their boobs, and then they drink a lot on Bourbon Street.
That's
my Mardi Gras.
Oh, wait, that's a different Mardi Gras.
Oh, okay.
So I guess in the old French version, they'd go and beg, and then the nobles, if they did a good enough performance, would deign to throw them some food. An old potato or something, it's in the song. So, but there was captains, and the captains were kind of like the wealthier families among the peasantry, or the wealthier families in a given area when it moved down to the south, it sounded like. So maybe the Tuttles would be kind of in charge of something like this. And they had, the captains had whips, they had burlap whips, and the idea was you make sure that people don't get too out of line, but you want them to get out of line. That's part of the idea behind it.
Jesus.
And so you chase a chicken through the mud and you ride on the horses. And I have no experience with it, but this is what I've read. It sounds like this is kind of like where this, maybe the idea of these guys in masks with a Tuttle at the head kind of comes from. And, we get that little taste at the end when Scarface on the lawnmower says, my family's been here a long time.
Yes.
So they've been doing this stuff a long time.
Yeah. I mean, and this is a tradition there. So we get, and thank you for that. Now we know, and all the pieces are starting to really make sense. And really, I mean, at this point, Cole, and again, great job with the exposition there, because within the first 15 minutes of this episode, we've got all the history. We're able to get completely caught up in the investigation of the last 2 years, as it leads back to 2002 and then way back to 1995. And then we can just get on with it. We can get on with the new version.
Yeah.
Marty and Cole 2.0, going out and doing some more stuff, which is fantastic.
I just love the idea of breaking into all of Reverend Billy Lee Tuttle's houses.
Yeah. All of them.
I just love the idea of the good Reverend of the Neon Cross. I love that he has four properties at least to be broken.
That was some good cat burglar shit too.
Yeah, it was.
Justin Blad jumping over walls, cracking safes.
You know, and he said it. I was aware that I might have lost my mind. You know?
Because Marty
that's
was
a
like,
great line.
He was like, "Now you broke into the man." He's like, "Well, trust me. I knew. I think I might have lost
I
my mind.
I was aware.
I'm aware. This is crazy. You know. But yeah. So, but when that's how we found the tape.
Yeah.
Right? So.
And those pictures,
and pictures,
which were unpleasant.
Which, again, we weren't able to see what's in the pictures as well. So moving on. So we do find out what happened. And, you know, once they decide they're going to work together and get this thing cracking again, we do see them go into the Heart Detective Agency, or the Heart Recovery. Is that what it's called? Heart Investigative Solutions. And get to work. And, it's kind of a cool moment, I think, because they have not all the same resources, and even Hart says, like, I don't subscribe to all the services, I don't do this, but they have the resources, so they're going to actually get down dirty and do some detective work. And I just had this real cool kind of a reset sense of like, wow, here's where we get into some real true detective work. And I'm like, here we are. So, you know, so it's really kind of cool as to what we saw them do in 95, what we saw them do in 2002 and then compared to like how they're going to do this now. These guys are seasoned. They've worked together before. They've been through everything. They're almost in this sense, probably as well prepared for this moment as they've ever will be in their entire lives.
And they don't have the restraints and red tape of being within their bureau.
No.
Being in CID, is that what they're in?
Yes.
But
yes.
They also don't have the protection of that. And I think that was interesting when Marty went to go see Maggie and, you know, he's basically, you know, saying goodbye, you know.
Well, is he? I mean, how did you read that, Julia?
I have a question about that too. I think with Cole coming back into his life and them sort of, I'm not saying that they've made up, but there's an understanding between them. Now I think it's a good time for him. He feels it's a good time to revisit Maggie, catch up with the children, which I'm surprised that he's not as involved with his children's lives, being such an advocate for children. And,
sure.
And that was so a bummer, wasn't family. It? I really thought he would be more involved.
Yeah.
I mean,
but maybe she took them away. Maybe that was her doing.
Yeah.
She's got a fancy schmancy new house. I don't know. She married up.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
And she's, you know, she's definitely sort of dressing different.
And she's a different woman.
Different woman entirely. And there seems to be hints that not only does maybe, you know, Marty not see the kids at all, if at all, but the kids are maybe having some problems as well.
Well, yeah, Avery seems to be having, Avery's on meds, but he apparently,
Audrey,
I'm sorry, he has no relationship with Audrey at all. He's going to buy a painting of hers.
If he can afford it.
Mm-hmm. And there's no like, hey, I'm going to call her. It's, I'm going to buy a painting. That's going to be my contribution.
Yeah.
You know, that'll be my involvement.
Well, if you
so
remember,
whatever
Maggie came from a pretty highbrow background as well.
Sure.
So I think she's just reassimilated into that life, the life that she was raised with, the life that she is comfortable with. She kind of slummed it with him for a long time. That didn't work out. So I'm sure her family pulled her back in.
Right. Yeah, that was a very, very poignant scene for a few reasons, because you have that moment, like they haven't seen each other in 2 years and they're very cordial to each other. A lot clearly has gone down. And there's that moment when, he said he was working with Rust, you know, how the officers asked him about what was going on with Rust. And there was that he didn't want to ask, but he had to ask, you know, have you seen him?
That was painful.
Yeah. Have you talked to him? Rust.
And she says, not since. And, you know, just
not since.
Not since. No, we're not going to say since what. Just not since.
Not
since.
We know.
And she's got the coffee in her hand, and she's so put together. Yeah, it was very well done. I enjoy that.
Very well done. So then she asked the question, which is the question I'm asking you guys. You don't come around in 2 years. You know, what's going on here? Like,
Let me ask you guys a question about this. Did she seem somewhat, maybe a teeny bit disappointed that they're friends again? Like her little thing didn't mean enough to keep them permanently?
No, I didn't read that at all.
Is that something I read into it?
Yes, I think so.
What do you think, Jules?
I'm thinking about that. It didn't really cross my mind. But
I'm not saying it was like a huge thing.
I think there was disappointment, but I think there was a little worry.
What I read in this situation is, especially when she goes to another fantastic scene, when she goes to see Russ at the bar, which is just another... great sort of heart-wrenching exchange, because she keeps asking him questions and he never answers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she'll say, like, you know, how are you? Have you been? He's like, you know, he'll answer it like, looks like you've done doing well for yourself. Like, mm-hmm. He'll ask a question with a statement, but never really directly addressing her. He kept his distance emotionally and even in the conversation, you know.
She ruined him.
Yeah, and then she said, you know, get out of here, you're classing up the joint. Mm-hmm. But what I got in that moment, when she asked him, you know, look, you know, you just make sure, please assure me that it's not going to hurt him. It's not going to hurt Marty.
Can't do that.
You know?
Well, you know, I think it's interesting. It seems like we're trained by TV a little bit to have certain things we accept. And I think that this episode is kind of, you know, is setting us up in that regard. Like, you know, we've got, we see both the guys when they're over there at Heart Investigation, and they're having their discussion about, you know, what have you been up to? They're both basically going, you know, wake up, go to work, go home, drink, watch TV, go to sleep.
Right.
That's what they're doing.
Right.
And I've seen, you know, Marty says he's seen a couple of girls and nothing serious, and you know, he's doing his work. But that's it. They're not. He's. I don't go out late. I go home. And it sounds like they're both living mirror images. I mean, you know, obviously, you know, Hart looks like he's doing better than Russ does.
Right.
But they're not doing anything.
Right.
And when this case comes along, they don't have any family. They don't have any relationships that matter.
Right.
Right. It seems to me like they're getting ready to die. Right. Almost like there's gearing up to do whatever needs to be done, and if it's a suicide run at the Hill, we're going to do it. And I think it's odd to have paid enough attention to this show to feel like, okay, I'm being told that this is what might happen, and I'm okay with it. And it's just interesting. I think that might be where we're getting set up to go.
I think so. I mean, I agree. I did like that. What I've got once I had the Maggie and Marty exchange, and then the Maggie and Russ exchange, and then of course. Seeing Rust and Cole, seeing Marty and Cole back together again doing their thing, I get the sense that, like, these are three people who, despite all they've been through, not only respect one another, but really care about one another. I mean, they have a bond, all three of them have a bond in a way that they can't really, you know, I mean, obviously Rust and Hart have a bond through working together in this case and seeing what they've seen and been through. Obviously, you know, Maggie and Hart were married and they have a bond and share children. And clearly, you know, whether they like it or not, Rust and Maggie have a bond because what occurred between them through all their sort of like, you know, sexual tension and frustration, what occurred through them is what sort of ruined all three of these people in a certain extent.
And they're also all bound together by secrets, secrecy. They're all lying.
Right.
At some point.
And I like how the other question that Marty asked was, you know, did you tell the cops, you know, that what happened?
Right.
I think that's the basis of that visit. I think that was the driving force in that visit.
Yeah.
But I think there was a little battle with head and heart in that one.
Sure.
It almost feels Arthurian, whatever the term is. You know, like King Arthur and Guinevere and Lancelot, you know, you had that love triangle and you know, basically, they both have to check in with her at the end to get Excalibur back to go fight. You know,
yeah.
And so it feels that way.
That's great. I love that.
It feels like, you know, they both have to check in with the same girl, or you know, and now they're going to go out and have that last, you know, the ride off and you know, that's the vibe,
man,
I get.
I love that, Joe Sanfilippo. That's the best thing you said in 10 years.
You're welcome. I love 10. That. That's very strong.
That's strong. No, I do.
That's a
I
solid
do
decade.
Love, but I do.
Wow.
I do love
I'm talking
King,
out my ass for 10 years.
It's true. No, I do love the King Arthur reference because that, you know, you have these old knights, if you will, who were, you know, in battle, best friends together. They, you know, are split apart by the same woman who they both loved. And now years and years later, they're back together to do the same quest. But there is that mutual sort of respect and love. There.
It's interesting, isn't it?
Smart. Yeah, it's really smart.
You're a smart guy.
I love that.
Every 10 years.
The best, that's
wait,
the best thing.
Wait, 2024, I'm going to drop another one. It's going to
blow
your mind.
I can't wait.
So let's get back to this investigation. So we jump back and they actually start going on. And hey, what do you call a black guy who talks in open mic about True Detective?
Oh, you call him a pilot?
A host, you racist.
a host, you racist. That was great. So yeah, and I love it was some good old fashioned sort of like once they establish what they have to do and they have to go out and beat the pavement and do some work here. Again, one thing that, you know, Nick Pizzolatto pointed out is that, you know, now we sort of see, you know, back in the old days, it was Hart who actually went out and was, you know, pounding the pavement and getting the work done. And Hart was actually back at, you know, typing shit up and back the thing and da da da. And now we see Marty's out there. Marty's out there, like, hitting the, you know, doing the work, you know.
And let's be real, that was some deep work, man.
I mean, all the boxes.
Before 05, well, that's going to be over in the boxes.
Yeah.
Over in the archives. Open that door. That was ugly.
That was ugly. But he's actually doing the work. But also, but to get to the opportunity to do the work, he's got to go schmooze and tell, you know, black pilot jokes. And he's got to, you know.
He's a people person.
Pulls out bottles of 12-year-old, you know, 12-year-old scotch.
If you're a single malt guy, you do have a vulnerability.
Yeah.
Because people can give you a bottle of single malt and get an awful lot out of you.
Trust me, I'm one of those guys.
That is the truth.
It's very true. So that was cool. And then, so he's got some information there, and they get to work. And one of the things that they do, you know, before we get to the visit to back to the projects, which was very interesting. But I do want to talk about Sheriff, good old Sheriff Childress, and that initial exchange, like sort of him going out to the golf course. And yeah, I do agree. Is that you said the sort of the life that he could have had? That
yeah, absolutely.
Had? That was I really saw that moment where, you know, he's out there in the golf course and, you know, doing the George Bush, watch this drive, and, like, you know, doing that whole move. You know, like, what girl? I don't know.
We will hunt him down everywhere. Now watch this drive.
Oh, that was beautiful. He pulled that move. And so I don't know. But yeah, that was he did some good detective work there as well.
No, he did. And you know, you really get that soft touch from him.
Yeah.
And Childress, you know, he's no slouch either. He's in that Maserati, and he says, I'm happy to help out any way I can. Have him give me a call. Yeah. Have him give me a call. But send him over. I'll take care of him.
Yeah.
Which we should go back.
He thinks he doth protest too much.
Ooh.
Oh, yes.
Ooh. We brought it back.
Yes. We should go before that when it was, Hart is doing this groundwork, but he's also kind of reluctant. You know, it's like, how am I supposed to do that? And he's like, he's a sheriff. He won't talk. And Cole says, I've got a pair of jumper cables.
Batteries and battery says different.
Yes. I love that line. I got a car battery and jumper cables that argue different.
Oh, so, I love it.
And so obviously he has that conversation with him, and all of his spidey senses go off. He drives off in a Maserati, and he's very pissed.
Yeah.
He's pissed that he's been lied to his
face. Get your jumper cables ready.
We might need that jumper cables.
He's fucking lying.
He's lying, which is also fantastic. So I love this. I love this Hart and this new Hart and Cole, They're a great team.
Yeah.
Hart and Cole. But no, sorry.
Oh.
Terrible. I have to apologize
really
for that one.
Really bad. 10 years, huh?
10 years. You got to wait. It's going to be a while.
So, Julia, so continuing on, the next part of the next thing they do is they go down and they visit.
Go to the project.
The projects and visit the
She worked for the, Tuttles. She
worked for Sam Tuttle. Right? Yes. Sam Tuttle.
For 19 years.
And she had a lot of information, didn't she?
Yes, she did.
Yeah, she came out the dementia pretty hard, man.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Very, very.
I can't find the name of that actress on IMDb. Yeah. She was incredible. Great.
Man. Again, another scene-stealing performance.
Yeah, exactly. He writes these great scenes, like one scenes
and
for...
And these actors and actresses come in and just knock it out
of
the park every time. That was great.
Great showcase of these actors.
So and again, another scary, not very reminiscent of the girl of the young girl in the asylum, in a moment where everything seems to be fine and then something snaps.
Well, it starts with very pleasant memories, of the kids running around everywhere, and she answers these questions so matter of factly of all his extramarital affairs and how he pretty much would hit it and quit it.
Yes.
And it paints such an interesting picture, doesn't it? Like it, and especially to use her as the device, because it paints the picture from the help's point of view. Here's Sam. Here's the big guy, and he had all these kids, and he never, he never hit it again, right?
I think that they were all virgins. There. Was that what we were alluding to? That he had a penchant for virgins.
Once he got them, he was over it.
He de-virginized them, then it was over.
Hmm. And kids. And the idea that you could do that, and maybe you still can. I mean, we don't know. But maybe there's parts of the country you can still do that in where you have you can have as much as you can afford. And that was something, wasn't it?
All that was not great to hear. But when Cole busts out the tax man book and breaks out the figures, things seem to change a lot, which was really scary. Carcosa. She flipped out.
She did. She went into some trance, sort of.
Yeah.
Screaming, death is not the end. Rejoice, Carcosa. Death is not the end.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Ah!
So whatever was going on with the Tuttles in the 18 years, they definitely got there. I'm asking, because I was a little confused. I mean, does this mean that she was just sort of indoctrinated in the Tuttle ways? Is this something, this is some old Bayou stuff she's known? What happened there?
Maybe it's a little post-traumatic.
PTSD? I mean, how did you read that?
Well, I always feel like I have a tendency on this particular show with this area to feel almost... condescending is not the right term, but it's so foreign to me that I go, well, that could be a thing. And I don't know, maybe it could be a thing where, like, there are people that live there and have lived there for generations and live there now, and this is a thing. And it sounds like when I looked up that certain type of Mardi Gras,
right.
What do you call it? Corps de Mardi Gras, that's a real thing. And by the way, it's tomorrow.
Yeah, so Fat Tuesday's tomorrow.
That's tomorrow. But that's, that's a real thing, and it's so specific. Mm-hmm. And I mean, as you page through it, it is so specific, and it's so specific to an area. So, I mean, yeah, maybe, it could be that the idea would be that everyone in that area knew about this thing.
But why did she go off into that crazy? It was like terror. It was like, I don't know what it was. It was sort of like she was a true believer.
That's what it felt like.
You're a servant in a family like that, in that area of the country, at that time, for that long, you are completely immersed in all facets of that family. I can't I can't help but to believe that she was drawn into it in some way, living this life with them,
right.
That she saw these things going on, that she maybe helped set it up or helped bring the people in or whatever she did. It was her lifestyle with them.
Very true. I mean, I don't know. I know what exactly happened. I still don't quite understand. I'm sure that some folks on YouTube and iTunes will help us out with that, because I just was afraid. That's all I know. But in that sense, so they got out, and you know, the daughter was very much like, she has dementia. It's not making much sense. And
F you pay me.
Yeah, you can pay me. But then, you know, Cole says, made a hell of a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, and what does he say? You know, Russ says, wouldn't it be awful? And he says, and then Marty says, what?
Well, no, death. I hope she's wrong.
Yeah, I hope she's wrong. That's what it was.
About what? Is it about death being the end?
Death not being the end.
Death not being the end. You know, another line there, because these poor guys have seen some shit. The other thing that Russ said, you know, going back, and when they had that, I want to just go back to the sort of exchange when they were talking about where they've been in this whole time, and sort of how they've lived and what they're doing the day to day, and Hart was like, "You've never asked me that before," and it's kind of like, "Well, I mean, shit, like we're boys, let's talk about this stuff," and how similar their lives was, and just that glimpse into specifically Hart's life. It just seemed sort of very sad from this guy who was rolling all that dick swagger back in, you know, 95 to 2002. Like, now he's just kind of like, you know, surfingmatch.com.
With the hottest of hot little booty shots. And now,
now he's like, you know.
Womp womp.
Yeah, like clicking through match.com.
Leaving a little something to be desired.
His age. And it's like, you know, I don't know. It's just kind of a weird sad state of affairs for him. Very lonely, obviously. And, you know, Cole, clearly Cole's not doing much better in his own way. You know, and I don't know, man. It's like it's just something about what this case has done to these two men, and what these two and what their lifestyles back then, and you know the triangle with Maggie has done to these two men. And it feels like that solving this it goes beyond sort of like paying a debt. It just sort of feels like them finishing this and solving this case is their way out. Is their way out of this sort of mundane life that they've been living, this trap they've been put themselves
tortured.
Into. They put themselves in this sort of torturous purgatory since 2000, you know, since 2002.
Well, it's indicative of the story of the Yellow King.
Exactly.
And reading that play.
Yes. One of the things that Russ did say is, and when described, you know, why, you know, Hart's like, why, you know, why do you want to do this? And he says, you know, my life has been a circle of violence and degradation, and I just, why did you come
ready,
back? I
ready
just
want, to tie it off.
Ready to tie it off. And I don't know, does that, you know, that feels like, it's kind of brings me to not my last question, but another question I have for you guys. It feels like these guys are both sort of heading towards the end, right?
Yeah, that's what I've said. I agree with you.
I mean, like the goodbye to Maggie, maybe. My life's been a circle. You know, I'm going to tie this thing off. I hope she's wrong about death not being the end. These are guys like that. Whatever they're going to find here, whatever they're willing to do to close this case, it feels like it's beginning to feel like it might.
They have nothing left to lose.
That's what I was saying earlier. We've been trained watching TV enough and reading enough stories that we know that these guys have been set up to die. They've got nothing left to live. This is the last thing they got to do. They got to get this done. And we know that what they're going up against is, you know, Tuttle. Eddie's the state senator. You know, Billy Lee's dead because Eddie probably killed him.
Sure.
You know, and so we know that even if they win, they're probably going to lose, you know. So there's no real hope that they're going to walk away from this.
Right.
This is pretty. It seems to me like it's pretty much a suicide mission. We're going to go up the hill and hope for the best. You know, we're going up Hamburger Hill and hopefully we'll get down, but we probably won't.
Do they want to get down?
I don't know if they care. I mean, I think you're right. I think it's been such a thing for both of them. Everything has stopped. Until this is done, I think you're right. I think it's kind of like become like a holdup for them. And I'll, you know, to go back to the Arthurian idea, you know, it's their holy grail. Like once they get it, you know,
what's left?
We're you know, or maybe we can move on. But I think more than likely it's all over.
Like Thelma and Louise.
Like Thelma and Louise holding hands, driving off the cliff. It's all Brad Pitt's fault.
Spoiler alert. Hello. let's get back to what I love the when they decide to you know talk have that conversation with Sheriff Childress on the boat which was also very well. There's a very like sort of Italian Joe. You know about this? Some Sicilian Italian mafia, you know, mood to that. Just the whole notion of how you guys, you know, you guys do it.
Yeah,
it's
that's
this,
how we
it's
do
this
it.
Thing like when he's talking to him, like they're shitting, shooting the shit, drinking some beers, fishing. He's like, so about that thing. You know, about he's like, oh, that thing again? Yeah, about that thing. Let's talk about that thing. And so, like, you know, I thought that was over. Yeah, I want to know about the thing. He's like, well, I told you I'm going to know about the thing. He's like, all right.
Let's just not talk about it. Let's have ourselves a nice day. Enjoy some fishing. All right, I'm not going to talk about it. I'm not going to ask you about it again. But he's going to have some.
That was some cool-ass shit. That was straight out of Goodfellas meets Godfather meets everything.
That really did. It did feel right, like Joe? It did feel straight gangster. Did
that? So is that how you guys do it though? Is that tell me?
Yeah. Thanksgiving's a bitch. Like yeah. It's like is the turkey ready? Oh, you can ask me if the turkey's ready, and then no. Oh, I don't know about the turkey, but this guy.
Yes.
That's how we do.
I like that lull to us, like feeling like everything's fine and comfortable. I mean, why not just get him on the boat and do it immediately? Like, why not get him on the boat? Like, hey,
well, what the hell fun is that?
Yeah, to
before
get
we
out.
Sit down and have a before we cast this lure, I got a couple questions.
You know what it is? I think it's we're going to give you one last chance to not be an asshole.
Exactly,
we're giving you one last chance. Just maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you're you're an asshole. Okay, here we go.
Yes. Doing it the hard way. And they had to get him all the way out there. I don't know if you guys have ever been on the bayou before.
I have not. Have you been?
Yes. And it is, it's quiet and it's isolating and it's eerie.
I would imagine it's scary.
And it's kind of like the coolest place ever.
Yeah?
But it's, I imagine it to be terrifying and there's really no way out.
Right.
It just is a mass expanse that goes on forever of marshland and crazy animals.
Especially when
not for me, man.
Especially when Russ Cole is pointing a Glock at your face.
You want to get out of there
with gloves on.
I mean, he means
business.
We've established that when the gloves come on in this
yes,
show,
it's
bad stuff's gonna happen.
Anytime
it's
you
true.
See some gloves. Bad stuff's gonna
we're
happen.
Not gonna leave any marks on us, and we're not gonna leave any stuff behind on you.
And what did Childress say? Like, I'll have Boss Cracker splitting your ass in Angola.
Yep.
that's something. I don't know. That's a great line.
That's a great line.
Yes.
I don't think it has to do with hitting him in the buttock.
No.
I don't think so.
No.
I got a different vibe.
And Angola is not a pleasant place.
No, it doesn't sound like a pleasant place. No.
I don't want to go to there.
I do not want to go to there.
Yeah. So that happens. So we'll get to see how that's resolved next week. And I mean, we'll maybe get that to predictions. But I mean, you know, well, hopefully he'll be forthcoming with a gun to his head, not have to get the shit kicked out.
I don't know. This runs deep. This is multi-generational.
And
once you
like the only person that can fire a sheriff is the governor.
Uh-huh.
So once you pull a gun on a sheriff,
you are committed.
So like what like yeah like they have to kill him. I mean, or tie him up. I mean, what happened? Like
tie him up permanently.
This is I don't know. Like, and they can't really kill him. So what happened? They get all the info out of him, and then they let him go to do what? Like, this is I don't know what happens here. How does the boat end?
I don't see how he gets out of this one. I don't. Or unless you just throw him overboard and leave him to the alligators.
Okay, maybe you just tie him up.
I don't know. Whatever's down there.
Chompy things.
Chompy things. Y'all got some chompy things?
Chompy things.
It also sort of depends on his level of involvement in this because, as you see, both these men have zero tolerance from anyone who's involved in this thing, even minorly or majorly. So.
No doubt.
Well, he's a Childress. We've learned this. And so is the man with the scars. He's a Childress.
Right.
So this is as bad as it gets. This is the family.
Which brings us to the final sequence.
Your guys came out.
I was
watching. I was like, Joe is so excited. They've been waiting for them to get out of the office all year.
You know what? That was a great little exchange. They had a very, Marty and Russ level exchange in the car about sort of driving around directions and there's nothing out here. That was really great. That was cool. So they did stop for directions. They're looking for the church.
Mm-hmm.
And who do they see?
They see the Spaghetti Man.
The Spaghetti Man.
Yellow King.
Now,
no green ears, but you know when you're driving a lawnmower like that, a lot of times they wear the big green
the thingy-dingies.
Ear things like these, only green.
Oh, yeah.
That Julia chick's pretty smart.
Yeah.
Once every 5 years for me.
Boom. All right. You're like double smarter than me.
I didn't like, so I didn't, I mean, I don't know, maybe I was I paused. I didn't see. Was he scarred up?
Yeah, he was scarred up.
It's not as bad as I thought it would
be. In my head, I'm like, he's like really, really scarred up. But he's,
well, I mean, according to the spaghetti face.
Right. Drawing, I'm like, he got that. A spaghetti face.
Well, you know, you think about it. If you're a little kid, he's huge, right? Yeah. If you're a little kid, he's enormous. And if you see that kind of scarring like that, if you're a little, that's
what
a
the
lot.
Children always remember. That's what Toby remembered. That's what Kelly in the hospital remembered.
Yeah.
That's what they remembered, not just as a child, but at that church. I mean, he's had three references to the man with the scars.
Yes. So this
it's memorable.
So this episode sort of ended the way episode three ended, where you have, you know, the look at the monster. Like, you see that last shot and you see the monster. You see Ledoux and the tidy whities and the gas mask doing the fuck you walk. And now we see, you know, the man with the scars, the spaghetti face, doing the F you mo, I guess is what he's doing.
Listen, this next scene, I want you to mow, but I want you to mow with, like, some real dark attitude. Can you do that?
I got it. We'll call it the F.U. mow.
The F.U. mow.
So, but you made a good point, Julia. He is,
going in a circle. The reference, the theme of the circle keeps on coming up, not only throughout this entire season, but through this episode a lot. They make a lot of reference to it. Time is a flat circle, the circle of violence and degradation.
Yes.
The spiral. The yes. spiral symbol, the yes. ever expanding circular fuck up, he yes. says. Yes. Pardon my yes. language, but he said right. it's a direct quote.
Yep. And now we have
Bernie face guy. Scarface guy. Bernie face?
Bernie face. Bernie face. Mo. What did we decide? Mo. Mowing
with? F-U-Mo.
F-U-Mo. Bernie face did an F-U-Mo.
Just mowing in a nice circle, nice yes. spiral, maybe. I don't know.
I agree. I saw it at the end of that when camera's pulling back, I was like, oh,
it's
shit.
It's a circle. Of course, yeah. It's a circle.
Look at that.
And then when it pulled back further, that shot, I mean, was that the tree to the left?
Was that the Tree of Souls? I don't know.
I don't think, no. Cause
I didn't feel like it. I thought that was the one that she was at. That's a
yeah,
different
that's
tree.
Right. That's a different tree that
that Dora Lang was at.
Right. But, you know, a great pullout, a great shot, and, you know, I mean, episode 8, it's all going down now. Episode 8 is a huge, huge secret because a lot of critics, a lot of friends of mine who have seen, like, they you know, they've released the first four, so a lot of people who've seen the first four, and they're like, ah, yeah, this thing is greater, this thing sucks, whatever it is, and then they release the next three, and then people have seen them, but no one has gotten episode 8.
So are we all going to lose our shit? Are we all going to go mad? Well, are we all going to have some Carcosa?
I don't know,
we all
a lot go... of, like, when you're friends with, like, a lot of writers and critics
yeah,
and stuff.
Yeah, you used to feel that inside track.
Well, they do a lot of, like, and I don't watch this stuff. Like, even if I get it, I try not to watch it, like, because I kind of want to watch it with the folks. But, like, you get this sort of, like, yeah, I've seen the first six.
It's cool. It's all right.
I've seen the first two. I've seen the first eight. Whatever it is. But what's really cool about this is no one's seen this one. So we're all going to be watching it together. And the fact that they won't release it, didn't release it, makes it all that much more like, oh, shit. Right?
You know what? I'm going to go ahead and second your all shit.
Yes.
Oh, shit.
Well, I don't know. Anything else? Anything we miss, you know, before we...
I'm certain of it.
Oh, of course. Yeah,
we missed 1,000 things. I'm sure...
No question.
I'm sure the internet will let us know.
They will light us up. We missed the inside of the shed there. In the storage shed, we had the circular symbol on the on the inside of the wall.
Right.
What else
did we something
miss?
I saw on the interwebs. Someone noticed that one of the paintings in Maggie's house may have had black stars.
Oh.
I'm reading that book, and that book is messing with me.
The King in Yellow.
Yes.
Well, don't do it.
Well, I'm reading it. I'm in it.
All right.
I'm in it.
Well, okay.
Just letting you know.
Don't go mad.
It's already happened.
Thank you, all of us. I should remind you. Thank you, all of us, for joining us here and downloading us on iTunes. You've consistently made us the number one show here at AfterBuzz. We've been number one for six of the 7 weeks that we've been on, and we really, really appreciate it. We also appreciate all your comments on iTunes as well, and continue to rate us. And you know, we have our loyal fans, and we have our new fans, and we have our detractors. And you know what? We love you all. Thank you for downloading us anyway. I appreciate all your comments and all of our YouTubers who also listen and follow us from show to show, and also all the new people that listen to us. We appreciate you too. If you're watching us on YouTube, hello. And that's it. Let's jump into some predictions.
Do it.
I got one this time.
You got one?
Oh, you got a good one.
Now you're after Buzz TV predictions.
Well, for the first time in 18 months, Julia has come out and said, I got one.
I actually have one.
So I'm ready to hear this prediction.
Now I'm panicking. No, I don't want to say it out loud.
Okay.
You must.
Okay. I predict that Marty's daughter, Audrey, the sort of effed up one who's on and off her meds. Oh, I think there's a reason that she's effed up. I think she has been sexually abused and is part of this ring somehow.
Oh, no.
Because if you remember, if we go back a little bit, they had the naked Barbie surrounded by the four other dolls. They had the drawings that she did, and now she's all effed up. And I think that it will really tie into Maggie's family with the rich father.
Oh, no.
Ooh, you're good.
So I think she's been sexually abused, probably at the hands of the father who is her grandfather, who will be involved with this whole Tuttle.
Do you know that you used to be the worst predictioner ever, and now your prediction, you're like winning predictions every week.
Yes.
And I don't even know if they're coming true. I have no idea, because I don't remember them a week later. But they are fantastic.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, here's my predictions. I think the guys are not going to make it out of this one way or another.
Right.
I think that Eddie Tuttle is not going to go down. He's the state senator. He's not going to go down. They may get the lawnmower guy, but I think the end of this is going to be very much like there's hiccups, and we you know, occasionally some things happen, but we don't lose. And we've been running this a long time. We're going to keep running it.
Right. I think it's evident that these guys, I think these guys aren't going to make it out. I think the question is, how are they not going to make it out? And I think that, like, I like your prediction about it's something related to the family, but I can only think that, it'll be Hart will see something again that he just can't abide. And then that's going to, at a certain point that you reach a point of no return. So they're going to start. This only ends in death. Whoever's at the end of this, whether from not just Spaghetti Man, but I'm talking about the people who are in the family who are pulling the strings of Spaghetti Man, no pun intended again, they all will probably die, and probably all die by the hands of Hart and Cole. And I think the ensuing, whatever happens after that gunfight or during that melee will result in their death. I don't know if that's an accurate prediction.
What I just said.
Death everywhere.
I just said that. The people guys are going to die.
People gonna die.
He did. We done?
What do you call a black? No, I'm just kidding. What do you call an Italian? I got nothing. Yes, we're done. thank you for joining us for the AfterBuzz After Show, True Detective, Episode 7. After You've Gone, we will have one to go, one big one. So we'll be there for next week. And thank you for joining us.
Where can we find you, Joe Braswell?
Oh. I screwed up.
Where can we find you, Joseph Braswell?
Thank you. You can find me on the Twitters and Instagram at Joe K. Braswell. And where can we find you, Joe?
You can find me on the Twitters at Joe Filippo, JoeFlippo, and on the interwebs. My website is josephsanfilippo.com. And Ms. Julia Kearley, where can we find you?
On Twitter and Instagram with my name, Julia Kearley, JULIACEARLEY. And then here at AfterBuzz for many, many things.
Yes. I mean it now. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week.
Woo!
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Oh. Buzz you later!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.